Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritcha. Naram Chayeva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayo Mudirayet. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavachutama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer our obeisances unto the Personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, unto Mother Saraswati, the Goddess of Learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and I missed somebody. Yeah, I said her. To Narayan, the supermost human being. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is practically destroyed, and thus loving service to the Personality of Godhead, whose praise the transcendental song is established as an irrevocable fact. Do you know what irrevocable means? What does it mean? Revoke means to take back, to change. Irrevocable means not possible anymore. So I got asked quite late last night to give class, so I hope by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the devotees something useful will come out. We could try chanting this verse, it's short. Kvachit chita vata janeka daivika bhautikat Mianam dukhanam pratinivarane kalpo duranta vishaya vishan vishana ashte. Who wants to try? It's quite short. Okay. Huh? Oh, so what verse is on there? Oh, you put the next one up. Okay. Never mind then. I think this one didn't have a purport, right? I will do verse 34 and 35, and I'd like to make little comments here and there. So I think I'll just offer my prayers now and then just read like that. Om Gyana Chimirandhasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmayi Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master is forcing open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. Vanchakalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaurda Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So who went to the Rathayatra yesterday? Yeah, they're probably exhausted. It was Harinam yesterday in Rathayatra. I heard there were 7 Swamis. Wow. I mean, after them, really got the mercy. So Lokanath Swami, Kadambakanda Swami, Maranath Swami, Satchananda Swami, Chandramali Swami, and 2 more Swamis. Purushottam Swami, and 1 more, apparently. So it was just that. I mean, Amsterdam needs the mercy. And Amsterdam got the mercy. So I'm very happy for Amsterdam and for all the devotees that got to witness this transcendental event that I can imagine after Rathayatra and then another day of Mahaharanam. Devotees must be very tired. So today's verse, we will be hearing about the devotees who don't go on Harinam. The conditioned soul suffers many miserable bodily conditions, such as being affected by severe cold and strong winds. He also suffers due to the activities of other living beings and due to natural disturbances. When he is unable to counteract them and has to remain in a miserable condition, he naturally becomes very morose because he wants to enjoy material facilities. So let's see if we're all here. Who remembers a little bit about what we're being told here? I'm trying to remember that. Oh yes, it's Mahara. It's a Bharata, Jad Bharata talking to Maharaj Rahugana, I believe. Or is it Narada Muni now? Yeah, okay. Okay. So, what was the verse about? Should I repeat it again? Okay. This is what happened to the devotees that didn't, or to the people that didn't get to go on Harinam yesterday in Amsterdam. The conditioned soul suffers many miserable bodily conditions. I mean, when you go on Harinam, your body suffers, but you don't necessarily notice so much because it gets very ecstatic out there. Such as being affected by severe cold and strong winds or overwhelming heat. He also suffers due to the activities of other living beings and due to natural disturbances. When he is unable to counteract them and has to remain in a miserable condition, he naturally becomes very morose because he wants to enjoy material facilities. Okay, try again. What's going on in this verse? Yeah. Yeah, he wants to enjoy. And there's other conditions. Not only does he suffer from the conditions of that's called Adidaivika. What other miseries does he experience? Huh? Adibhautika. Other living entities or the ants or flies or the wasps, and even sometimes our friends. Our friends can hurt us more than our enemies, because at least we don't expect our friends to hurt us. Enemies. One time at a class, I think I even asked a question in Mayapur to Jananivas Prabhu. Sometimes devotees, they seem to, we don't expect it from devotees, but devotees sometimes don't treat us very nicely. He says, well, if you don't go out in book distribution, you've got to get your purification somewhere. I thought, whoa. That was interesting. Because when you go out in book distribution, nobody cares who you are. They just tell you what to do and where to go, and unless you're getting some very special mercy, but either way it's special mercy, purification is taking place. Okay, so other living entities, and then he said natural conditions, which I guess means like may not feel very natural to us, like we're walking on the earth, right? The earth is our support. So what do you experience when the earth opens up? Can you imagine? It's like there's a nice verse in the Bhagavatam, just as the earth is the only shelter for those whose feet have slipped, then the Lord's mercy is the only shelter for the devotee. But some people have experienced that they're walking on the earth and the earth isn't there anymore. So that's called supernatural, beyond their control, Adidaivika. I can't imagine. Here we're, in the Ardennes, everything's very solid, and then you hear about tsunamis and earthquakes, and you think, when's our turn coming? And so because people want to enjoy they suffer a lot. So this indicates that if one doesn't want to enjoy material activities, then one suffers much less. If one's focus is more on advancing in spiritual life, and we're in a humble mood of service, and not so attached to our personal enjoyment, then we don't experience the miseries of the world in the same way as one who wants to enjoy material facilities. That's the main focus in life, how to arrange things in such a way that I can enjoy. But then there are others, like I don't claim that I'm detached from material enjoyment, but I have some knowledge by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the Vaishnavas that I'm not meant for personal enjoyment. I'm meant to participate in the enjoyment of the Lord and enjoy supreme happiness. So, of course, because I'm not fixed in that knowledge, because I'm still materially conditioned, when I do undergo suffering, I know what I have to do. I know where I have to turn, and I get shelter from that. So that's, even if one is materially attached, if one has some knowledge, it's very, very helpful. I remember, how many of you have heard of Thomas Merton? Yeah, he's a Christian saint. Well, they canonized him and then they decanonized him. In any case, do you know the story? Well, what happened was he was a very saintly devotee of the Christian church, and he went to India at a certain point. They sent him to India, but he had an accident there. He died young. But he had said that he had written down some things, but he didn't want it published until 25 years after he died. But he didn't know he was going to die that young. I guess he thought the other generation would pass away before they get to know that he did have some relationship with a woman after all, even though he was a celibate monk. Anyway, he also wrote a positive commentary in one of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gitas. He liked the Bhagavad Gita of Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, when he was very young, he was born into a family. His mother was atheistic. She was quite an intellectual, and she really wanted to protect her son from the contamination of religion. But she died when he was really young. She died, and then her mother died, and then her father died, and the little boy, you know, he said there was nothing to do but suffer like an animal. There was nothing. There was so much suffering, but he didn't have any spiritual knowledge at that time. And he remembered how bad it was for him, that everybody was dying and he didn't know what to do. He was just miserable. And the whole family was miserable. So they didn't take shelter of spiritual knowledge. It was available in their family, but for some reason, his mother especially, and I think his father, he said his father was religious in a covert way. He didn't speak a lot about religion. I guess if your wife is atheistic, you have to be a little bit careful if you want to keep peace in the family. But the point is that a little Krishna consciousness helps so much. I remember also there was one very special devotee. I think since then he passed away. I believe he was from Bulgaria. Maybe you remember him. I think his name was Pranabandhu. He used to live in Holland. He was a disciple of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And he was telling me that before he became a devotee, he was the biggest drug dealer in his country. And he himself became addicted to heroin. And at one point he was told, what did they tell him? That something, I forget exactly what, he went on a methadone program, but he had to do something that he didn't want to do in order to continue getting the methadone treatment, and he refused to do it. So then he was dying. His body was in heavy withdrawal, and he was in a very, very bad condition. And as he didn't leave, obviously, because he lived to tell the tale, but he was on the point of death. And he said he could see that everything around him, everyone around him, was conditioned by lust. There was no one that could help him in this moment that he was dying. He said even his own mother, who loved him much as any mother can love a child, he could also see that even she was unable to help him. But then at a certain point, he started hearing the word Krishna and Rama. He had maybe heard it in a Harinam Kirtan or something like that. And it just kept reverberating in his mind, and he got some shelter there. He was, like, in his mind, he was trying to find shelter anywhere. He couldn't even get shelter from his own mother. So, but and somehow or other, because of the holy name, he was able to hold on to life and get better. And eventually, he took to Krishna consciousness. But because of his drug use, he developed, I believe he got hepatitis C. And from what I understood, he passed away since then. But he was a very nice devotee. He definitely had a lot of realization of how a little Krishna consciousness helped so much. And it's good for devotees to hear about these things, because it is true that when one is leaving the body, everything, never mind the earth opening up, the very body which has been home and which one is so strongly identified with, is not there anymore. And one has to go, and one doesn't know where one's going. Of course, even if one's chanted Hare Krishna, one may not be pure, may not be totally offenseless. So there will be anxiety, there will be fear. When my god sister Mula Prakriti was leaving her body, she was gasping for breath. And she said, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." And so Sangeeta Priya, who's a palliative nurse, she told the other devotee, "Do something, say something to her." So the devotee told her, "Prabhupada will breathe for you." And immediately, Mula Prakriti became peaceful again, and she could leave her body peacefully because she remembered Srila Prabhupada, and she was very, very serious devotee, so that was also very much to her credit. But the point is that it's not that because we have knowledge and because we're practicing Krishna consciousness that everything becomes like a conveyor belt. We have to be very actively involved with the transcendental knowledge and be very sincere in our relationship with the Lord so that the Lord can reciprocate with us. So the next verse, Kvachim mito vya vaharan yat kinchid tanam upayati vita satyena. Sometimes conditioned souls exchange money, but in due course of time, enmity arises because of cheating. Although there may be a tiny profit, the conditioned souls cease to be friends and become enemies. So what happened here? What's the problem here now? Do you remember? Huh? Yeah, cheating. And what? How does that manifest? What's the problem? Why does it... Exactly? Huh? Yeah, what was the cheating concerned with? Money, yeah. Yeah, even if people are really good friends, if there's some cheating, there shouldn't be cheating between friends. In Kali Yuga, it's the age of Kali, and Kali has been allowed to reside where there's gold. Of course, for us, the gold is those paper things that we put in, which the Prabhupada said is a false standard of money. It doesn't represent what's really in the treasury. So, a devotee told me something very nice. She said, always be very clear in your dealings with money, especially in Kali Yuga, because otherwise you'll have difficulty in your relationship. So I like that very much. It was a practical application of a very important concept. Because even if you try to cheat, especially a friend, concerning money, or if you're not straight, if you're not straightforward about the money dealings, then you'll become enemies. So Prabhupada, in the purport, he relates this to a very general principle, which I was surprised, but he says, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.8, anybody know what it is, 5.5.8? I'm sure Palananda Maharaj would know. Pumsa striya mituni bhavam etam tayor mito ridaya grantam ahu atogri hakshetra sutapta vitaya janasha moham yamaham mameti. Very familiar verse. Prabhupada translates it one way. I will read the translation that he wrote before, but first I'll read his. Sometimes Prabhupada takes a verse that he's translated in the original text and then he kind of makes it in another way. He says, the monkey-like conditioned soul first becomes attached to... What's the big attachment? Huh? Yeah, sex. And when intercourse actually takes place, he becomes more attached. He then requires some material comforts, apartment, house, food, friends, wealth, and so on. That's the monkey-like. I mean, I'm thinking, it's not really monkey-like. Monkey-like people, monkeys don't really have houses and things like that, but they do have their whole... How many people have observed the monkeys in Vrindavan? They get real cozy together. They can also get very heavy with one another if things don't go the way they want. It's just that in the human form, it's much more polished. So Prabhupada says in the original text, the attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusion and thinks in terms of I and mine. So Prabhupada says, in order to acquire these things, he has to cheat others, and this creates enmity even among the most intimate friends. Sometimes this enmity is created between the conditioned soul and the father or spiritual master. When I was reading this, it's funny because I had been thinking of this story a little bit lately, and it's interesting how Krishna arranged for me to speak on this. First, there's a story about Brihaspati, who had a very beautiful wife, and her name was Tara. But then the moon god, his name was Soma, who expected, he's very exalted. He was born from the tears of a great sage named Atri. Apparently Atri and his wife were so, Atri was so touched by his wife that he cried, and then the child Soma was born. It was a pretty special birth. But it's interesting that even though his birth was quite pure, he was very proud. He was so proud that he stole the wife of his spiritual master. Brihaspati is the spiritual master of all the demigods. So he stole her. And then a big fight came out in between the demigods and the other demigods. But of course the demons got involved because they like to fight. And the demons don't like Brihaspati, so they sided with Soma. It was a whole thing. Anyway, finally Tara was brought back to Brihaspati. And by this time, guess what? Who remembers? Huh? Yeah, Tara was pregnant. Surprise, surprise. And so Brihaspati, he wanted to know if the child within the womb of his wife was his child or the child of Soma. So she was all embarrassed, and she wasn't, obviously if she's embarrassed, we already know what the problem is, but she wouldn't speak. So finally, Lord Brahma had to get involved. I mean, this is pretty, the highest demigod in the whole administration had to come and deal with the problem. He took her to even her own son who had been, her son was, actually what Brihaspati did is force the wife, I guess you can do that in the heavenly planets, you give birth to this child now. And she did, and it was a very, very beautiful child, and the demigods, they don't have to, the child doesn't go through all the stuff that the kids in this world go through. It's quite developed immediately. Papa's here. She's looking for you, your daughter. And so the child came out, and then very beautiful child. And both Brihaspati and Soma wanted the child. But they were saying, this is my child. No, this is my child. And then even the child, the mother wouldn't say. So the child says, come on, you're so unchaste. Why don't you tell them who's the father of this child? So Lord Brahma had to get involved, and he took her to a you know, quiet place, and he spoke nice words to her, and he said, so who's the father of the child? So she finally admitted that that was the sun god. So you can see that even in the heavenly planets, and this was in the beginning of creation, Atri was the son of Brahma. Huh? Atri was the father of Soma. Yeah. And Atri was the son of Lord Brahma. Anyway, so we can see that someone wasn't following some regulated principles here. I mean, I guess the demigods are not expected to so much, but it was a problem. Because he even kidnapped the wife of his spiritual master. This is very, very bad. Prabhupada says sometimes this enmity takes place even between the conditioned soul and the father or the spiritual master. So Prabhupada says, unless one is firmly fixed in the regulated principles, one may perform mischievous acts, even if one is a member of the Krishna consciousness movement. So here we see how important that the regulated principles of devotional service are. Not just, of course, the four regulated principles are foundational, but we receive so many instructions about following the regulated principles of spiritual life in the nectar of instruction, in the nectar of devotion. And that brought to mind one time for me, I wanted to meet with one of that was a long time ago, at least 30 years ago, I guess. I wanted to speak to a GBC sannyasi guru. And first thing he asked me was whether I was following the regulated principles and chanting my 16 rounds. So I thought, wow, that's really nice that he's concerned about my spiritual life. And I also remembered that Prabhupada had said that the duty of the GBC is to make sure that he wanted to make sure that he said the GBC's duty is to make sure that all the devotees in his zone are nicely following the principles and chanting their 16 rounds. So I thought that was nice that he asked me that. But later on I found out that he himself hadn't been following. So maybe that's why he was remembering to make, you know, he was very nice, you could see. He was very concerned about my spiritual well-being. And actually, he not only that, but he was engaged in some very seriously mischievous activities. So Prabhupada isn't just saying something, you know, off the top of his head here. He's saying that if one doesn't follow these principles seriously to the best of one's capacity, then one is prone to be pulled into very sinful activities. So we need to regularly contemplate this and remember that the goal of our regulated principles is to have pure love of God, and thus we shouldn't become complacent or mechanical. Like, for example, if one is climbing Mount Everest, he said, if you climb Mount Everest, one slip, no one even knows you're gone. You just disappear. There's like clouds and snow. And so it's a long way up, and it's a long way down. And so Prabhupada's warning is that we need to keep alert and determined in our execution of the regulated principles of devotional service, especially if we want to make progress and we don't want to get sidetracked by all the nonsense activities that can go on in this world. Prabhupada says, we therefore advise our disciples to strictly follow the regulated principles. Otherwise, the most important movement for the upliftment of humanity will be hampered due to dissension among its members. Does anybody know what dissension is? Quarreling, disagreement. I had to write a paper one time about this. In the college, we had this course called Contemporary Social Issues in ISKCON. So I wrote a paper on the Jiva debate. Remember the fall, no fall? And Rupa Sanatana and Tathavit Prabhu said I should call the paper Falling into Dissension. Because to get into dissension between devotees, heavy quarreling and disagreement, it's already a fall. Doesn't matter where we fell from. We have to make sure we don't fall down further here. Prabhupada said, we therefore, yes. And then Yeah, so Prabhupada here, he's further emphasizing that if we are not careful about following the regulated principles of devotional service, that not only our own self-interest is being compromised, but also the movement, which is meant for the well-being of others, will be hampered. So, and he said that by following properly, we'll be peaceful. And since Kali Yuga is the age of quarrel and misunderstanding, dissension or quarrel and misunderstanding will arise in the mind if we're not peaceful by following the regulative principles of freedom. Krishna talks about the regulative principles of freedom. You remember this verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Talks about the regulative principles of freedom. That a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through the regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. So it's not that we bite the bullet and try to follow these regulative principles, but we should know that by following them, we get the mercy of the Lord. Even to be able to follow them is already the mercy of the Lord, and more mercy is coming. Prabhupada said, those who are serious about pushing forward this Krishna consciousness movement should remember this and strictly follow the regulated principles so that their minds will not be disturbed. So Prabhupada could understand that it wouldn't be easy for his disciples and his followers, and many of us who are from a materialistic background, it wouldn't be so easy for us to follow the regulated principles of devotional service. And he took the trouble again and again to repeat his instructions and to remind us of their importance practically until the last breath. Maybe you remember this scene from this video that we have of Prabhupada's final days. He's whispering into the microphone. Tamagun and Rajagun increase lust and greed, which implicates a living entity in such a way that he must exist in the material world in many, many forms. That is very dangerous. One should therefore be brought to Sattvagun by the establishment of Varna Ashram Dharma and should develop the brahminical qualifications of becoming very neat and clean, rising early in the morning and seeing Mangal Arti, and so on. In this way, one should stay in Sattvagun, and then one cannot be influenced by Tamagun and Rajagun. So they're very powerful, these regulative principles that Prabhupada's asking us to follow. And they have a very powerful effect. And we notice, if we don't do it, we notice how we feel. So thank you for all listening peacefully, kindly, peacefully. You look quite peaceful. If you have any comments, questions, corrections. Yes, wonderful. Huh? Yeah, we know if we don't go to the program. I know. I mean, I'm struggling. I have health problems. I'm struggling with them. And it's not the same. Like your Kadama Kana Swami says, if you don't go to Mangal Arti, chant your rounds in the morning, the whole day the elephant's on top of you. But if you do go, then you're on top of the elephant. Yes, Dulce. Yes. Yes. Well, one should see how it affects the consciousness. If you find that you're becoming weak in your practice of spiritual life, then obviously it's not going to be very helpful to go to that authority. Prabhupada said it's the duty of every transcendentalist to control. That's the first duty, to control their minds and senses. So maybe your authority is not able to follow very strongly, but you shouldn't use that as an excuse for yourself. If the authority is telling you not to follow, then you don't have to follow that authority. One time in the beginning of the movement, one devotee was telling the other devotees, you don't have to go to the morning program, you just have to work very hard for Krishna. You don't even have to chant your 16 rounds. So when Prabhupada found that out, he wasn't very pleased. You become automatically purified just by doing devotional service. But chanting around, just Prabhupada said, of all the instructions given by the spiritual master, the instruction to chant a minimum of 16 rounds is the most important. So, yeah, you're responsible for following following the process of devotional service. And if your authority is not able to do that, and if you feel that you're being influenced by that, then that's a problem. You may have to go to a higher authority and see what you want to do. Is the authority telling you that you shouldn't follow? Or you see that the person is not peaceful and gets in difficulty with other devotees? Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. But if the devotee is your authority, then you have to be very careful how you address that, or if you want to address it. It's a... Yeah. Well, you have to assess. Sometimes we may bring something to a higher authority, but the higher authority may not be able to do anything about it either, or may not be willing to do something about it. So you can try. If you think it's that important for the person involved, or you, if someone is criticizing and doing that repeatedly, you can mention that I understand you're criticizing somebody because you have a problem with them, but I'm your junior. I'm not the one you have to talk to about this because I can't help you or the other person. You can take a very humble position like that. So I would ask you not to discuss these things with me. You can also say, you can also get on the person's case, but that won't help. But if you tell the person, I'm not the one that you should discuss these things with, then normally they will get the idea. They'll say, oh, yeah, right. And then maybe you do have to go to a higher authority and say that this is a problem for you. And you're having difficulty dealing with it. Yeah, if you try telling someone that I don't want to hear these things and I can't help the situation and they're still doing it, then maybe you have to go to a higher authority. Yes, anytime our mind is very disturbed, we have to look a little bit and see what, first of all, what's my part in this? This is what Bhakti Tirtha Swami, he gave four main principles of how to improve community life. First thing he said, we want to think that in every disagreement, what is my part in it? Other was, at the time of death, the people I'm living with now are probably the same people that are going to be around. So I had to remember that. There was four different ones, I forget the other two. But especially in every disagreement, so a person who's speaking a lot about problems they have with others, they have to look and see, why am I so disturbed? And generally we can trace it back to our own inability to practice Krishna consciousness properly. And then we have to work on that. And then we have the strength to approach the problem from a different angle. So if you recognize that that's a problem, then you may have to address it in a higher place. Anything else? Yes, Ratan Prabhu. Yeah. Well, in the Nectar of Devotion, there's principles, and what's the other thing? There's adjustments. What's the... Details. So an acharya, he never changes the principles of devotional service, but he adjusts the details of their application. So as we know, in the beginning, Prabhupada wanted his disciples to chant 64 rounds, and then he wanted them to chant 32. But everybody was struggling with that. And so then he said 16 and no less. And you can see that some of Prabhupada's godbrothers, they're asking less because they look at us and they think these Westerners are hopeless. Of course, if you go to India, with all due respect, I don't find so many people that are doing that much better as far as the chanting of the japa is concerned. I mean, people in India are amazed that we chant 16 rounds every day, or that we chant Hare Krishna at all. Because even though in India they know the importance of chanting Hare Krishna, many people are not able to seriously take it up. It's not an ordinary thing. So because we're in Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON, which is a specific twig or branch of the Chaitanya tree, we are lined up with the parampara through Srila Prabhupada. So we line up with Prabhupada, with his spiritual master, Bhaktivinoda, Gokushwar Das, goes all the way back to the six Goswamis to Lord Chaitanya. So we stay in his line. That's our. We respect all other Vaishnav lines and also Prabhupada's godbrothers and other members of the Gaudiya Math who want to instruct their disciples and apply the details in even a more lenient way than Srila Prabhupada. But we have to decide which one we want to align ourselves with and then do that and align our desires, our body, our mind with how Srila Prabhupada is asking us to do that. So, yeah, not that the principle is different, but the details may be different. The regulated principles are not different. Anything else? Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, sometimes we think, oh, you know, I can't do it, and it's Krishna's mercy anyway, but Krishna wants to see something coming from our side. So if we make a serious endeavor to improve our spiritual life, Krishna will reciprocate with us because it's, I may not be the doer, but I'm the endeavor in the sense that I desire, and then I get the energy to endeavor to try to follow instructions of my spiritual master so that I can become less entangled in this material energy and be a better instrument for fulfilling the desires of Guru and Krishna. So Krishna will reciprocate with us. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita, as they surrender unto me. Of course, Krishna is much more merciful than, he's not such a, well, if they only give this much, I only give this much. No, he gives much more than we actually are able to give to him. But our advancement in spiritual life is dependent on our desire to serve Guru and serve Krishna, and Krishna reciprocates with that. Krishna has already done so much to get us to take shelter of him and his devotees. So he's definitely done his part. But it is a relationship. It's not a mechanical process. It's a relationship between Krishna and any devotee who is striving to move forward can feel that very strongly. As one tries to advance in spiritual life, one's eyes become more, one's ability to perceive Krishna's mercy becomes more and more developed. Even one will see in a terrible situation that this is Krishna's mercy. It's like Srila Prabhupada wrote this incredible poem when he was in Vrindavan, how, where are my family, where's my father, where's my mother, all of these were my own kin, where have they all gone? Now they're just a list of names. He said, I sit here when I'm reading it, I feel like tears coming to my eyes. It sounds like such. Prabhupada goes, I sit here and I have a good laugh. So Prabhupada could see, even in this most painful situation, that everything that was dear to him was being taken away, and he was laughing because he could see Krishna's mercy. And even sometimes we suffer or we see others suffering and we recognize, oh, not in our, you know, Krishna's mercy is happening. It's very, sometimes I look around and I was mentioning to you yesterday, Hari Bhakti, that sometimes you see devotees suffering, you think, how will they survive this? And then you see them, you know, a year later and they're happily doing their devotional service and you thought they'd never get through this difficult situation, but you see they got purified by it and they're more happy in Krishna consciousness. So then you, after some time, you begin to see that when someone's struggling in spiritual life and they went through a test that you were worried that they would never make, you see the power of devotional service. You think, oh. So then gradually you begin to think, when devotees are suffering, it's not that you don't feel compassion for them, but you think, Krishna's mercy is at work here. So that's what happens when one gets a little more experienced and purified in Krishna consciousness. What to speak if, you know, sometimes devotees tell me, I look like such a happy person in devotional service. I thought, what would happen if I really get out of Maya? You know, if I really can give myself 100%. So a little Krishna consciousness helps so much. What to speak if you become really Krishna conscious? Hare Krishna, are you going, Ratan Prabhu? What time does your train leave? Huh? Oh, yeah. You have any prasadam with you? Try to get a little bread from the kitchen or something. You have a little, have 5 minutes. Hare Krishna, Ratan Prabhu. Okay, thank you very much for your kind attention. Oh, last question, Hare Bhakti Prabhu. I was really worried about this devotee, yeah. Oh, this it's funny, I tried to contact him, but I heard later from I never got an answer from him because we were keeping a little bit in touch. But then the devotees told me that he had passed away because he had Hep C from using. Yeah. Then maybe just he came out of the movement. It took him some. He came out of the hospital. It took him some time. But he took the Krishna consciousness very seriously, got cleaned up, and he was able to live for a few more years and become a very serious devotee. Actually, one time he was living in Radhadesh for some time. He had a little difficulty with the Eastern European mentality. He was from the country, like over there people are more warm. Here we're more, you know, I mean, I think we're warm, but we manifest it in a different way. So he was struggling with that. But he came over to Holland, and he took the Krishna consciousness, and he was living in Radhadesh for some time. And we had a play. Parivita gave a summer festival play, Sakshi Gopal, and this devotee he was painted black, and he was Krishna in the drama. He was Krishna, and it's funny, he played the part so convincingly that night there was a kirtan. He wasn't black anymore, but one of the little Gurukuli kids were dancing in the kirtan, and this devotee, touched the devotee little girl by, you know, just brushing by, and she went to her mother and said, "Krishna touched me." So she, even though he wasn't, he really had been able to play the deity so nicely. I didn't recognize who it was when he played the deity, but she did. So I really had a soft spot for this devotee when he told me his story, and then when I found out he left his body, I mean, I thought, oh, I'm sure his destination was auspicious, because he really felt Krishna's mercy. So let us all pray that we can feel Krishna's mercy like that at the time of death. And in the time of life. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.